Welcome to iHeart Geek.
And welcome to a far out galaxy episode of iHeart Geek.
Yeah. I was going to do the Star Trek theme, but I think that would be inappropriate.
No, it's
you can do about 2 to 3 seconds.
There you go.
But we're not the Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That will come up later.
Yes.
Yes.
Kind of the Star Trek.
So we are discussing a movie that we absolutely all love on this show, and it is Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
Yay! Yeah.
There's like three perfect movies, and this is one of them. We will discuss all that in a minute.
Shortage of perfect movies in this world.
Make that four. You just mentioned the fourth one.
Nice.
Oh, Dub's wow. Three perfect movies are Galaxy Quest, the Aladdin reboot, and the King reboot.
And M. Night Shyamalan.
Probably the Mulan reboot, too.
And M. Night Shyamalan's Avatar, right?
Yes.
I'm over here going, Scott Pilgrim.
Ooh, and Scott Pilgrim.
Warriors. Right? Like, I'm being all serious and blessed.
I think
like,
that you're right on.
Every Disney remake ever.
I think you're right on those, Courtney.
But I'm not dumb. I've been around a while.
Yeah, you did a great impression of me last week. So, you know, it was fantastic. You've been around a minute. So we are doing Galaxy Quest, which is not a spoof, I don't think. It's an homage.
Yeah, yes. It's more of an homage, yeah.
So let me introduce our panel because we have a fantastic panel. I am Dub and I'm your producer. And when things go really bad, blame me. Let's see. I don't know if it's to my right or left, but we have Miss Geeky Paige. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I got my coffee in my Star Labs mug, so I'm ready to be
your Star Labs mug.
We listeners, if you want to know how I procured this Star Labs,
she'll tell you.
Hit me up on Facebook, and I'll tell you.
Build the guy. I've seen it.
Okay, the other person that's the bread in this is Miss Satomi. How are you doing today?
Hi. Oh, I'm the bread. Are you the tasty filling today?
I I'd like to think so. Family friendly.
That was family friendly.
It was.
So, yeah. Dove witch.
You are the piece of bread with just a touch of Oriental seasoning, right?
Oriental?
Asian.
Well, because that's the food flavor.
Okay, sure. Okay, I'll.
I wasn't
okay.
saying.
Okay. All right. I'm like, I
use that on purpose.
There you go.
I was
there
waiting for Satomi to just plug pole.
Like I'm out.
So how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be the soy sauce and bratwurst of this podcast today.
Soy sauce and bratwurst.
Hey, I am Japanese. I have a Japanese and a German. So we're down with that. It was a very confusing upbringing.
That would make me the pasta and the potatoes.
Pasta and potatoes are delicious. Don't turn you.
Because I'm Irish and Italian.
And below me, we have, well, one of the people below me, we have Mr. Blize. How are you doing today, bud?
I'm doing okay. My baby let me sleep in until 8 o'clock, so today's gonna be a good day.
Well, I know you're usually up at like 5.
Yeah.
Ew.
You can tell who's not a parent on the show. Like, ew.
So I'll be the auntie. I'll hop your kids up on sugar
and send them back,
and then hand them
then
back
you
to
give
you.
Them back.
Thank Yay. God you live in New York, so tell me.
So I can say this because it will be out when this video comes out. Thank you for doing that video. We appreciate it. That's awesome. Thank you for all the information, and you are just the most on it guy I've ever met in my life. I appreciate you doing it. This way I put it out so you can't really, yeah.
I'm not going to do it. You put it out there, and you look like a fool.
We've done that 3 times now, so it's all good. And special guest, we have a 2-for-1 package. We have Mr. Sean and his magical beard. How are you doing today, sir?
Woo, I'm good. My baby let me sleep in too, but mine is an orange cat. And he let me sleep in too. It's awesome. Normally at like 5 in the morning, I hear.
Oh.
Somewhere in the room. He's like, get up.
It's time to get up.
With your beard food. The way it is right now, I would think you would wake up with your cat making bread in your beard and just like purring.
Nice.
Because I would, if I were there, I'd just make bread in your beard.
Aww. That sounds so messy.
So let's get on to the subject at hand, which is Galaxy Quest. This is such a fun movie. And I kind of want to discuss like everything about it. I do recommend, because a lot of us watched it, would be the documentary on Amazon. It's free, called Never Surrender. After you watch this, if you haven't watched that documentary, I highly suggest it. Almost every fact we're going to say today is probably out of it. Except for Sean's facts. Sean has different facts. So yeah.
Sean's got good facts.
Yeah.
Sean has his extra special
I don't know if you know this, but the set of Galaxy Quest was actually repurposed from the set of Zhili. That is an absolutely true fact.
Who said that Hollywood doesn't recycle?
Exactly. No, I mean, look at
that. That's pre-cycling.
I'm going to need a moment.
Wow. Anybody need a cigarette after that? God. I know nobody smokes anymore, but no. Wow. Hey.
I do have a question.
Go ahead.
So before we start, because I don't want to offend anyone in our geekdom here. So I know that there's Trekkies and there's Trekkers. Are there Galaxies and Galaxers? And
Questarians.
Which one are we?
There are. I don't know what they're called.
Questarians.
I know they're Questariers.
No, they're actually referred to as Questarians in the movie.
Oh, okay.
In the movie, yes. Early on when Guy is at GalaxyCon.
Okay.
Guy Fieldman. Right.
I don't know if there are Questariers, but
I do want to hit on that, because there is a very bizarre and weird subculture that follows this movie, kind of like Star Trek. It's not as big as Trek or Star Wars, but they do definitely have their own community. It's really interesting because it's a single movie.
I think it's one of those movies that gained a cult following over time, because if you look at the box office numbers, it was barely not a flop. Like it just made double its money. So it's not like it exceeded expectations in theaters when it released. It was just one of those movies that came out, and I think people went to see if they had time. I mean, Tim Allen was probably the draw to it at the time, but I think since its release, it has gained that following that it just didn't have when it released.
Well, part of it is it came out at a time when, and they do discuss this in that documentary, it came out at a time when films were still pigeonholed, genre wise, and studios had no idea how to market this. Same thing as Princess Bride. It's kind of in that world where it's like, well, it's not a comedy, it's not a straight up comedy, it's not a drama, it's not an action movie,
it's a tearjerker at some point. It's got slapstick, it's got I mean, it really is. I mean, you know, we were saying that earlier, the perfect film. David Mamet, I believe it was, there's only three perfect films. One of them is Empire of the Sun. I don't remember the other one. And then the third one that he said was Galaxy Quest. And when you see that, you think it's a joke. But the more you think about it, this film is perfect. This film did not need a sequel. I like this.
And I mean, the cast.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You know, and then the fact that they did the brilliant thing of taking like sci-fi legends and making sure that they had them in there. Matter of fact, did you know that a lifelong friendship started between Alan Rickman and Tim Allen, and they actually had like a ship name, and they were Tim Allen Rickman. Totally true fact.
I can't. It's hard to read him.
I can't read him. I will not play poker with Sean. I'll tell you that much.
But seriously, the cast is outrageous.
Well, yeah. Let's hit some of the cast on here. Let's start with Alan Rickman, who is, as far as the geek world goes,
Shakespearean actor.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, he was more Spock than Spock in this.
Yeah.
But when he was cast, he was not known for doing that. He was known for all of his serious roles. So it was a big departure.
He was still Yippee-ki-yay at that point, right?
Mr. Falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's coming off of that, and then like roughly around the same time, he's coming off being the sheriff of Nottingham.
Oh yeah.
In Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where he's chewing scenery, but he's like the ultimate bad guy.
I still like that movie. Right. I don't care what people say.
Kevin Costner's a terrible Robin Hood, but
the movie was good. And hey, you got Bryan Adams on a soundtrack. Yeah. You win. Okay. So we got Alan Rickman there, who I don't think the movie happens without Rickman.
I don't think without any of them.
Moment.
There's a couple when he's putting the makeup on later. Yeah.
Oh, at the very beginning?
Yeah.
And he's got the makeup brush up his nose.
Yeah. and he hates the world.
What do you say? I played, what was it?
I played Richard III. That's right. 5 curtain calls.
and now look at me. Look at me.
But I don't know if you guys knew this, but a hot take. That was just an outtake. That wasn't in the script. He wrote that. Was it really?
No, not at all.
I'm just joking.
Sean's better at it than you are.
Sean is way better at it. I'm trying to make it obvious. But you could see him being kind of pissy like that. From everything I've ever heard, he was a wonderful human being.
Oh, yeah.
But I could see him getting a little pissy about that. I'm in this crap movie.
Well, it kind of fits, like you guys were just saying, what he was coming off of at the time. It fits that, what he was doing in that movie. He went from being this actor who's known for doing these serious roles into a comedy, or what was perceived to be, I know we say it's a bunch of genres, but it's perceived to be a comedy.
Yeah.
So that it's perfect acting for what he actually was in.
Very much so.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about the brilliance of Sigourney Weaver. I mean,
She's so good.
They didn't want to cast her at first. Didn't want anybody who had experience in a sci-fi film.
Yeah, but she so was not Ripley. She was her own character.
Yeah.
She was Uhura, but not.
You know, and I think that's what the brilliant move was in it, was to take her so opposite, because you see her and you assume that she's going to be, you know, the soldier. She's going to be like the Zoe from Serenity, and she wasn't, you know, and so that they turned what you would expect her to be cast as in that movie into the complete opposite, which I think is great.
Yeah, she fit that part so well. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it should be, it's a nothing part as far as the person she played on it. The part wasn't nothing, but the person she played was a nothing character. And she brought a love to it, and it's like it's the B actor, it's the second tier actor, she played it so well. And there's always
the joke in sci-fi up to a certain point. If you look back in the history of sci-fi films and TV shows, the women were there simply to be eye candy. They didn't do much of anything. Yeah. And that's what the joke is. I mean, with the exception of maybe the pilot of Star Trek, where they had the original number one was a female.
Yeah.
When they went to production and they changed out Christopher Pike to become Kirk, they relegated that actress. She ended up becoming Nurse Chapel. And you know, the women in sci-fi up until that point, or the time period that the Galaxy Quest TV show was supposed to be on, they didn't serve much of a purpose other than to just be pretty. Yeah. That's why I have one job and it's stupid, but I'm going to do it is such an important thing, because that's literally all women really did in all sci-fi B movies.
Yeah. And they did this, which I think was so right. I mean, you know, I hope I'm not being sexist on this, but I mean, she's a lot older on this, but she is still knockout beautiful.
She's stunning.
As you would want to see, you know, the shows you grew up watching, like, oh, wow, they're still beautiful. And she really was that, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, okay, let's talk. Tony Shalhoub, Monk. He's just such a great straight man in this.
Yeah.
Again, you need him because he was not bouncing off the walls. And he's like, yeah, he was just such a great character. I've never been a big Shalhoub fan. I know everyone loves Monk and all that, but this is the role that I love him in. You know, I like him in other stuff. I love him in this role because he just felt natural.
Well, he usually plays, you know, the more high strung characters, you know, the ones that something's always getting under their skin. It's like you even see now with like Mrs. Maisel, you know, with he's the one who's just like trying to keep it together and is not. So to have him come in and be this like really stoned out, just
oh yeah,
like he's there, but he's not.
And he definitely had a prescription to something or the other.
and he's the one who out of the, you know, the characters, he's the one who just kind of goes, okay, you know,
yeah,
like
accepts it, yeah,
yeah, and it's like cool, I'm in.
When he turns around and goes, should we try that? We're gonna try that. It's just like the ship is getting ready to be blown apart. He's we'll just try that.
Yeah.
Well, we
right again. Yeah. Group hug.
But I mean, it's such an important character, and you know, as everybody in this was so important. This amazes me, just because everybody was. I mean, every part, and there isn't any wasted parts. I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, similar to the message of the film is ensemble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about our quote unquote red shirt, Sam Rockwell.
I love that they acknowledged the red shirt.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I really love it. Yeah. And I love
out of here before someone kills Guy.
I think my favorite part is when he's having a breakdown in the shuttle and he's like, you have a last name. Do I? And then at the very end,
they give him one.
The end, they give him a last name.
Well,
but like he's tripping out. He's calling for mom and just fetal position because he knows he's the guy that's going to die when the ship lands.
Well, let me ask this for our two more well-known actors in here, Satomi and Sean. If you were a red shirt, how does that feel? Does that feel like that's just something you did, or is that something that you, because it is a beloved series, you'd hold on to forever?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I've often said that you could make me like third, like orange and green monster with giant horn in the middle of my forehead on the right in a cantina scene in Star Wars, and I will be thrilled, you know. But I think that there's like, I'd be like, every time, it didn't matter where we're at, like if I was walking by someone's house and saw them playing that movie through the window, I'd fast forward and pause and be like, that's me right there, you know. So I think like in that situation, you know, but I could anticipate. At the time, did they know how much lightning in a bottle that they had?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then, like, you get this role and you're like, ah, it's just a thing I did. And then later it might be like, I was a red shirt, you know?
But you got conventions that, forever now.
Right? Yeah. But I think that in the moment, it would very much be kind of like, all right, well, what am I doing? I'm going to fall into I'm going to be eaten by a giant worm. How many zeros are in the check? Okay, I'll take it. You know, is that fair? So tell me, what would you say?
I have nothing to add to that. That's pretty perfect. That's pretty perfect.
Well, it's something I really liked about the way that they portrayed this. You know, I have a huge respect for anybody that acts in anything just because it's hard to get to that point, blah, blah. I don't like that, you know, culture has made, you know, like the red shirt, for instance, let's just use that as just like, it's a joke character and it doesn't matter. They are important to the show. They're important to your enjoyment of this thing that you loved. So I like to put a little more respect to it. And I think they really did that with this movie, is they gave a lot of respect to that. It's a bit part, but look how important he really was to your enjoyment.
It raises the stakes. There's no threat.
Yeah.
If the people in the episodes aren't dying, you know, there's no threat. There's no, it creates real risk, you know? And I think the really interesting thing from an actor's perspective is you know, you're a red shirt, you know, but not playing a red shirt, you know, it's that idea of like drunk people don't know they're drunk and crazy people don't know they're crazy, you know, like, so you're there and you have to play it with all the gusto of I'm going to do this and I'm going to fight this thing and we're going to come back in one piece and I'm going to see my wife and rah, you know.
Well, and that's what makes Rockwell's performance so good, because he literally knows he's the red shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like he's
exactly.
Played the red shirt in the actual TV show, and now he's afraid that in this real life adventure they've been thrust into, mm-hmm. Oh crap, I'm the red shirt, I'm the only one that's expendable of this cast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
he
the
gets
fact
to play
that he
the meta, yeah, mm-hmm.
as he lives under this fear the entire time, it's mm-hmm. just I think he gets some of the funniest lines, but that's hard mm-hmm. to say because there's some really funny lines yeah. throughout this entire film.
But he's almost there.
Go ahead, Sinem.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, which makes sense because the aliens who create this world for them have taken it almost shot for shot of what they've seen in this TV mm-hmm. show. So who's to say they don't have something in that ship that's set up just for him to like be under and crush him at any moment? So it's just because that's what their mentality is through creating all this is they mm-hmm. verbatim take this. So they see this character in their minds. He's supposed to die.
Yep.
He's mm-hmm. not a main character. So, man. I mean, putting that in the mix, you know why he's terrified.
You need yeah. to write some fanfic about the fact that secretly there was like a lottery of people that had to be red shirts and died on the ship before the movie took place. And, did you know, so Tony Shalhoub's character was Fred Kwan, and Kwan is actually Klingon for man who hits machines.
No, it's
that is
not.
A totally true fact.
Someday you're going to be serious and we're going to like not
believe
you.
There's not enough phlegm for Kwan to be a Klingon word. Not that I'm a geek or anything.
Okay.
And no Klingon.
Two more I want to discuss before we get to the aliens and all the other cast. Let's talk about Daryl Mitchell, who was a child actor, who played a child actor. That was meta. That was absolutely mm-hmm. meta. You sit and he was a child actor because you watched him growing up as a kid. And then you see him in this and he's like, oh, well, he played a kid that grew up and this. Is this what he's like?
Well, one of my favorite moments is when he's getting carried off by Mathazar after the first time the ship gets attacked. And he's screaming the whole time like yeah. he's a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
And like twitching. Up. Yes, yeah. exactly. Got his little feet kicking.
But yeah, it's such a well-cast part. Because, I mean, that's interesting. And I don't know if you knew about why that was set the way it was. It wasn't set to bring in, okay, well, we're going to have somebody that was a child actor. But they wanted Daryl Mitchell in. And he was so much younger than the rest of the cast. Like, well, how do we do this? And then they made, oh, well, he was a child actor in the original.
Yeah, I mean, well, this whole movie is full of just, like, critiques on the industry throughout everything. So that's just one more thing that you could put into this is that this guy played a child actor. And he's done really nothing since but go to these conventions expecting to be that child actor. So he's perpetually stuck in a state of mind of this child because he has to continue to be that child, which is probably why he got lifted up and was kicking and screaming like a little kid.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And then the most controversial pick, according to this, the movie almost didn't get made partially because a lot of people didn't like him as a character, which was Tim Allen, who made the stupid movie.
Mm-hmm.
He made the movie. If it wasn't for him, that would be a stupid movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I can't see anybody else playing him. He was every bit Kirk. He was every bit Picard, and he was every bit who you expect to see Kirk and Picard be behind the scenes.
It would just have been an entirely different film.
Yeah.
If someone else had been cast, it would not have been the special thing it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you can't take it seriously. I mean, he can't. There's no way he took the character seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because if you played it too serious, it'd be boring. Yeah. Sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
You're fine. I loved how delicately they handled the the T'Kai Nimoy versus Shatner thing. You know what I mean? Like that they like the fact that it is known that it's never been. Well, no, T'Kai has since said it, but it used to be a thing that was implied that everyone hated Shatner. You know, mm-hmm. And then it mm-hmm. became, this is not one of my fun facts, but you know, it was implied that everyone hated Shatner.
This is actually true.
Yeah. And then over time, Shatner, morphed into the Mothman and they killed him and they were, I couldn't help myself.
Wow. But I was like, wait, was this an episode I missed? What? Huh? No,
but he's blending realities and it's hurting my head. I feel like
we need a little button that sends electric shocks to Sean to stop him.
Kidding aside, I love the fact that they delicately handled that topic and made it funny, and that I thought Tim Allen handled it with a bit of reverence and irreverence. You know what I mean? Like the way he came in the beginning, you know, I'm still a rock star. I'm a washed up rock star. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was just really, so.
No, I mean, he's every guy, every time I play at a show, there's the guy that's had a one hit wonder at some point years and years ago, and they still feel like they are that man. And that's every bit what he brought to the set. It's like,
Well, originally when the original script was that he hated being the captain. He hated the fact that he was so identified wrong as that. Mm-hmm. And it really was when Robert Gordon, right, came on
after
to write after. No, it was before.
After Zemeckis left.
It was before Ramis. Sorry, Ramis. Yeah. Before it was he was on, I think, before he left. But he came in and said, no, what if he loved being the captain? And this is like, this meant everything to him and how that changed everything. And I think that's why Tim Allen works so well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, because, I mean, that's another implied situation where Shatner actually hated being pigeonholed as Captain Kirk. I mean, he was, there's famous stories where he was a total jerk to people at conventions.
Oh yeah. The Saturday Night Live skit was based on real.
Yeah. I mean, like if anybody hasn't seen it, you can look it up on YouTube. There's an SNL skit that was done years ago with Shatner where he's like yelling and screaming at the people in the convention.
Get out of your mom's basement. And like,
he literally did that. He really did that. And so, you know, I think over the years he's kind of mellowed out and understands now how important this was to people he's calmed the heck out. But yeah, I mean, that's probably why they originally wrote the characters hating it, because he's Shatner. He's based on Shatner, whether Shatner wants to admit it or not.
Yeah.
little mini sideline. I saw his show years ago.
Me too.
And he actually talked about how at one point he was living in a trailer and some little kids had figured out who he was, came up and knocked on the door and said, "Are you Captain Kirk?" And he said, "Yeah, well, in fact, you want to see my ship?" And brought them into his trailer and gave him a tour of the trailer. Telling them that different parts were like, you know, Starship paraphernalia.
I'm hoping you're about to say kidding, because this is scaring me.
I were kidding. It's a true
story. I saw the one-man show too. And he addressed the Nimoy thing. He, at one point, he did this thing where he was showing a clip of Nimoy talking and then he pauses it. And it's that, you know, the awful pause face, you know, I'm doing my pause face for you where, you know, the eyes closed and that, you know, and look at that man hates me. That is the face of a man that hates me. And like, so like he addressed it in his one man show.
Yeah.
And of course, just like Dub said, there was no way that we weren't going to wind up talking about Star Trek in this.
There's no way. But the other side of that, they didn't take just from Kirk. They also took from Picard. From everything I've ever heard, Picard is very much the person he was on the screen was the person he was with the cast, and he was the leader and all that. And there was a lot of that seeped into the Tim Allen character, because he was very much, they may have hated him, but they also looked at him. He led the crew. I mean, he was not, he was definitely the leader the whole time. He didn't second guess anything when he was.
I think that probably naturally happened to a certain extent with the cast chemistry, the way that they related to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you can't look at Tim Allen and not be like, "Sure, man, what do you want to do? Let's go."
Right. And I would actually say that Alan Rickman's character is more the Picard character than Tim Allen's. And the reason I say that is because
he's English.
Up into the point that before Star Trek, Patrick Stewart was your Stentorian, Shakespearean, classically trained actor, and now all of a sudden he's in this kid show.
Yeah.
It wasn't just for kids, but you know what I mean? Now he's in this crazy loopy,
yeah.
You know, this is a guy who's played, I played Richard III. Like, he's had this illustrious career for years and years and years where he's been this amazing dramatic actor. And I think Alan Rickman's character is based more on Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Than Tim Allen's character was.
Well, it's definitely a stew, and I think there's going to get a lot of different characters and a lot of different characters.
To just kind of jump on something that Dub mentioned with off-screen, the cast followed Tim Allen as if he was the leader. I think also in their lives, it became a necessity to follow him because everyone wanted to see him at these conventions. That was made perfectly clear in like that first convention while they're all like waiting for him to come. So in order for them to keep doing these appearances and conventions and things like that, they needed him. Mm-hmm. So I think they were always in a forced to follow him as a leader, even in their outside lives.
That's actually so clear in that scene in the van when they all kind of tell him to go, you know, shove off, and they all get to the van and one of them goes, I think we should have just taken the job. I think this is about a job. And all of a sudden they're just like bolting.
Exactly.
So that's a very good point, Blaise.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Let's jump over to some of the aliens. We're going to go this a little bit faster. But you see, I want to get to the rest of this. So let's talk.
Thanks so much.
Enrico Calatini, who's been in everything. He was Mathazar. And he did and I can't not do the voice. It's almost like Tuvan throat singing.
It's an acting exercise that he used. It's literally an acting exercise that he used to come up with that voice. And they then said, hey, what about this? You are our last hope. You know,
it's almost like with the tube and throat.
It's a resonance thing.
It's coming out of another part of his body. It's mm-hmm. You're kind of a voice guy, Sean. Do you know anything about that?
You know, I'll be honest with you. There are so many different techniques for that, and I would honestly default to Satomi for anything vocal wise. Part of the reason that I consider myself a singer at all was because I had the pleasure of working with Satomi on a show where she coached me. So I would default to her, but I would say that it was Horton. So, I've heard things with like I could see the wine cork exercise where you put wine cork to like really work on the muscle memory and things like that, like kind of giving that same effect and really being precise with the diction and playing with that. You know, it's so funny though. I mean, that happens a lot in movies, like total, like nothing to do with this movie at all. But in Wolf of Wall Street, the whole thing at the table with Matthew McConaughey was one of his vocal warm-ups, you know? So I think that's really cool that he drew in his own personal experience and brought that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bag of trick stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, where do you come up with that though? You watch the documentary, you find out he did that during an audition, and then he hadn't had the part yet, but they played that for everybody else that came in. Because like, no, this is kind of what you need to go for. And that's where they just, and it's like, it's melodic, but not. It's like,
well, that's
it's
what
like
Tommy was just saying. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tommy was just saying it's a vocal exercise that you do before you get ready. So I'm sure he was just, that was something that he does on the normal before he does any kind of casting call or anything like that. And he just went for it.
Yeah. But he did so brilliantly in that role. Let's talk about the one alien that was only in a scene, but should have been in every scene. Cause I wanted to see what he would have done, which was Rainn Wilson. Yes, he was in this movie, kids.
He was in a couple scenes actually, but he was sort of,
I think he was in the limo and he was in the first scene.
And he was also, I want to say he was in engineering at some point with Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah.
In the background. I think he was in the hug circle.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Well, no, I do know what happened. He was doing some pilot for a show that didn't go anywhere. And so he had to go do that instead of doing the rest of this movie. It wasn't The Office or anything that he took off for. he's just a brilliant actor, period. Even taking away all the other stuff, you could see when he was on the screen, there was star power there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's wonderful.
So I don't know, honestly, maybe it's probably a better thing because I think it, you know, between Mathazar and him, who are you going to watch on screen, even though Mathazar is the leader? Just because when he was on screen, you notice him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd still personally be down with Mathazar. I just think
yeah.
See, I can't even remember. I can't even remember Rainn Wilson being in it.
Yep. He's in a
few scenes. It's just like, I think at this point, it's more of like, oh, look, there he is.
When we watched The Last Starfighter, we saw Will Wheaton is in a scene. It's like, oh, there he is. Okay,
well, I think you're right. I think if they would have expanded on any kind of role that they would have given him, I think it would have been a bit too much because he is very like in your face in the roles that he takes. So I think if you would have given him any sort of role in this, it would have started to move away from the subtlety of being like crazy alien to just like,
because
he always has like wide eyed in your face, just insane. But that's not really what those aliens were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Let's talk Missy Pyle for a second, who in everything she's ever in, I love her. She's so everything she is in. She's not afraid to look ugly. She's not afraid to look weird. And I mean, she definitely looked weird. She didn't look ugly, but she looked weird and very.
She looked alien. She looked
very alien, and she fit the role so well. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you also feel like, okay, well, she's definitely doing an impression of Mathazar here rather than being her own thing. And that's my complaint. And I don't know if it's because she's the only female, so it just looks different to me.
I would actually disagree with you there because there has to be some sort of commonality with the Thermians. They all learned English the same, way. They all have the same construct of voice box. So it's kind of like an accent.
Yeah.
Me, it was just it was just an accent.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an insult. It's just, that's just something that sticks out to me.
I always felt that they all have their own individual personality features. But the thing is, what makes it so cool is you realize that they have based themselves, their human versions of themselves, on whatever they saw on TV.
Yeah.
Because they call it the historical documents. So it's like, yes, they base themselves, but they also talked about Gilligan's Island at the dinner table. So they've seen Gilligan's Island. Mm-hmm. Right. So clearly what it was supposed to be is those, all the different aliens, all the Thermians said their human form is based on something that they saw on television. So it's how they get it from. So for her, if they're watching TV shows from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, it's a lot of smiling ladies.
True.
Yeah.
Doing their thing.
She wasn't getting anybody coffee, though, I noticed, in all those 50s and 60s role. I'm just saying.
In the same room, you would have.
And she didn't end up in a fridge. So bad joke. Okay, let's talk. Who I think really did steal the show, Robin Sachs, who's another guy that I guess does a lot of Shakespearean work. He was the character that I think had the most moving scene with Alan Rickman.
Is he the one that bases his life on his son's hammer?
By Grapthar's hammer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You shall be avenged.
But the way that whole story arc with him was just so interesting. He tried to get him to say it because that meant so much to him. And then at the end, he's 30 years old. Watch it, people.
Oh, no, it's Patrick Breen.
Patrick Breen was that
Robin Sachs. Robin Sachs is the villain. Yeah.
Okay. I apologize. Okay.
The only reason I'm looking it up because I wanted to see Patrick Breen's what he'd done when you said he'd done all this amazing dramatic work. So I wanted to see what he did, and I just happened to look it up. So.
Well, I know the last thing, his last meeting with Alan Rickman is Alan Rickman came to New York just to watch him in a play. So, because they were so close afterwards. That's awesome. Everybody was close afterwards.
That's awesome.
Could you imagine being like, okay, I'm doing a play and Alan Rickman is in the audience?
My friend, Mr. Alan Rickman is in the audience tonight.
Actually, they weren't just friends. I don't know if you know this, but those two actors were actually related. They're both part alien.
I was waiting for that one to come up.
I was waiting for that
Totally true fact.
I was totally waiting for that.
Sean
totally
will be here all week, ladies and gentlemen. Tip your waitress, try the meal.
But getting back to that scene, which I think is really important, is when Rickman does say the line at the end, that's the first time it means anything to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of how the geek world works. I mean, we see things and we just connect to them. the actor probably doesn't have the connection we have. But for whatever reason, us as the fan, we connect to this and we almost put this as part of our lives. And then when you finally get the actor to understand what they brought to you, I think that that was such a beautiful moment in that.
You know, that's, it's really funny, like, as you're saying that, like, three things popped into my head. And I think it's fun, like, from an actor's perspective as well, like, with that and them dealing with that. And right now is the first time that I've even thought about the fact that they dealt with that. Is, so my brother used to work on pumps, like pool pumps in LA and, like, pool equipment, and actually worked on Patrick Stewart's pool. And he said to him, what's wrong with
the pump? He said, make Patrick it so.
This is not one of my fun facts. This is true, I promise. He said, my brother said, what's wrong with the pump? And he said, it won't engage. And my brother went, you said engage. And Patrick Stewart went, cute. And then, like, walked him over to the pump, right? So,
security.
So, like, I think of that one. And then I think of, like a friend of mine just got one of those cameos from Peter Weller. And, like, four times in it, Peter Weller begrudgingly said, like, serve and protect, and a couple of other RoboCop yep. lines. And then, you know, and then it made me think of just, like, the fact that there become these lines, you know. I saw Robin Williams at, like, a benefit performance, and as he was wrapping up his bit, he did, like, 3 minutes as he's walking back to the seat. This lady yelled, Nanu, Nanu, from the audience. And he stopped and he went back to the microphone and went, I have an Academy Award now, and went on for, like, 5 minutes about, like, bad career choices, which I disagree. I think he was great in that. Yeah, but the point being, like the fact that, you know, you don't think about the fact that you get this iconic line and it's like, I'm not just that.
Yeah.
There's, you know, and you are forever pigeonholed into that role, and everyone is constantly coming up to you asking you to say that line, and, you know, and it, you know, it just the fact that they dealt with that in it as well, and that it finally returned to having some value. I'm sure the first time that he said it, it was great, you know, and loved it, and then the 100th time he said it, it was like mercury poisoning. You know?
What that made me think of is I was watching there was Chris Evans at the premiere of one of might have been Endgame, either Infinity War, Endgame, one of the tail end ones, where, and this girl wanted his autograph, but she wanted him to write out, what was it? I could do this all day.
Yeah,
because she wanted to get it tattooed. Well. So she's writing it out. He's writing it out, and he stops and he's like, wait, he goes, is that what I say? And he goes, I say I could do this all day, or I could do this. Like, there's two different ways. He says it. And he goes, go back and watch. He goes, I say it two different ways. He goes, I never say it the same way twice. So the phrase is actually different, but he didn't catch it. So he starts writing. He goes, wait, that's not what I say. That's but he has
so great.
Said it, like, maybe in Winter Soldier, he says it a different way. And then this way. So he can't even remember exactly the right line he's supposed to say. And that's one of Captain America's newest iconic lines from the films, which I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Was,
yeah, that's
so
great.
It kind of goes along the lines of by Grapthar's hammer. Mm-hmm. After the 87th time, do you even say it right anymore?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that connection between fan and hero, basically, that, you know, we all get that a little bit. I mean, we know it's not real, but it's still it's a little bit of hero stuff. And when there's that finally connects, I think that's you know, makes us all believe, oh, okay, yes, you are the character that we thought you were, even though you're not at all. You know, final character I want to talk about who I think stole the show, and that is Justin Long, who is basically he's the us character. He's every nerdy high school kid that loves Star Trek. He's every comic book geek. He's
I've never related to a character more in my life.
Tell us about why.
Because I'm that nerd. And, like, he reminds me of my cousin. He does. Jason, if you're listening, I'm sorry, but I'm totally going to tell everybody about how dorky you are. Because we grew up watching Star Trek and, like, repeats of the old one. And we grew up when Next Generation came out. And we had, you know, we played Star Wars. We did all that kind of stuff. But, like, my cousin Jason has Blueprints and the Klingon Dictionary. And, like, he could, if you have a Star Trek question.
He knows.
Like an obscure fact. You can go
Yeah.
You can go to him and he will know, and he'll tell you the episode it's in and all that stuff. And so he reminds me a lot of my cousin and I, and especially my cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like if the Enterprise needed to land, my cousin is the dude to help it land.
So Blythe, I'm going to give this to you because you haven't been talking much in the, as far as that character goes, he very much is, you know, I know we always pick on you, you're younger, but he is your generation right now of, there is those people because everyone is so connected to the internet and they're so connected to each other with their fandoms. Is this a real thing for your generation or no? And that I'm not picking on you. I'm not doing that stupid thing, but
I mean, it definitely can be. I think it depends on the fandom, but it definitely is one of those things where he was more into it because he either grew up watching it first run, but he was a really small child.
Mm-hmm.
So it was much more of that level of realism for him.
Yeah.
That he was just integrated into it. And I guess, yeah, you could say that my generation, when these big fandoms hit, because you grow up with it for so long, it just becomes part of you and you never really let it go. One of the big things I can say for myself, and I know it's one of the biggest fandoms out there, is Pokemon.
Yeah.
So when I was a kid, Pokemon was there from the moment I was 10 years old, and it hasn't gone away till present day. Like, they're still making games, they're still doing all the stuff. That's why when the mobile game came out, it was one of the biggest things of all time because it reached out to so many people. But in this particular case, because he grew up with it, and I'm sure he had the internet, so you can do research on all the things that he had. That's why he had the blueprints and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I definitely would say that it creates our technology and the way that we have things now, definitely it creates a different sort of fandom than you would have had pre-internet.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to do this real quick because we are talking about the Justin Long character, who is the us character. We're going to do a quick listener feedback. I'm not going to break to music or anything. We had a metric poop ton of feedback, but we're only going to do three. Is that about right?
Yeah, I got three. Everybody's were good, but these are the three that I'm going to read.
Okay. So we're going to do three real quick just because we appreciate you guys writing in, but we're running short on time. So
yeah, go ahead. So of the three, the first one I'm going to read out to you is Mark Hagel. Mark says, backing the spaceship out with that long screech because Laredo couldn't get it quite set up. And also Sam Rockwell's character screaming after gelatinous instant space travel. It's a good moment.
One thing before you go on to the next one, because I want to comment on that comment. Do you think that scene is a homage to Starship Troopers? Because she has that scene where she's backing the thing out and she's so good of a pilot that she barely misses the side of the overall station. But he's not. He knows how to pilot because of all the experience that he has on the show, but he's not really that good of a pilot. So he screeches the side where she would have in Starship Troopers. Well, I've always felt that.
Maybe.
Interesting fact, the backing up of the ship when he does that thing and it screeches along, it's actually an homage to Starship Troopers. I don't know.
Wow. So I've always thought about that, Sean.
You just took a put it as another fake fact. That's amazing.
Okay, no, that's nice. Really interesting. And if it's not, it should be. If it should be forevermore identified as an homage to it. Yeah.
Put it in the Wikipedia now.
It might be right. Because Starship Troopers was 97 and 99. So it's very possible. Okay, so the next one is TC.
The voice of the show.
Exactly. So he said, there's so many scenes to choose from. Yeah, we know. We agree. This is a strongly written tongue-in-cheek parody of Star Trek, and the writers absolutely went for broke. Tony Shalhoub was simply epic in every scene he's in. Notably, his spaced-out character seems to wrap his head around the situations far more quickly than any other character. And that is a good point. I don't think we brought that up. He figures briefly stuff out before that. That could be when I have to step away. Sam Rockman's Guy Fliegelman, the no-name crewman who was certain he was destined to die due to not being given a name, a last name, by the writers, was a comic genius. But Enrico Catalani's depiction of Mathazar stole the show for me. Yep. Mathazar explaining to the Galaxy Quest crew how they built the ship to the television show's specs was a slice of acting so sublime as to be deemed a masterpiece.
And that was a brilliant recap of our episode.
Yeah, I mean, it was entirely right there.
better than we could have said it. That's amazing. Yeah.
Hey, TC could have saved you guys an hour.
Go just read TC's thing. And then final, Michael Minervini.
I think it's Minervini,
but Michael, if I'm saying it wrong, my apologies, sir. It says, any scene that includes Tony Shalhoub because it's clear his character is high.
Fair enough.
We haven't talked about one of the best scenes with Tony Shalhoub. It's with Tony Shalhoub and Missy Pyle when they finally
connect. Oh, that's not right.
This is where we all turn into Chris Farley. You know that scene?
And I really think that is playing on the, you know, the fact that like in Star Trek that Shatner, you know, with every female alien near him, right? And the fact that it's like, well, no, they're not all going to be like super hot women in green body paint. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
What if they're like a tentacle thing, you know?
My cousins and I would always refer to Shatner as the alien babe magnet.
Yeah. Nice.
And then in Next Generation, they use Riker as the alien babe magnet. Yes.
That's so weird. Fun fact, I'm known as the alien beard magnet. Is that weird? That's weird.
You know
what?
That's the first fact that you've said that's 100% true. yeah, so I mean, we could do this all day, but we unfortunately
run out of time.
So what?
Can I?
So what I want to do? Oh, go
like
ahead.
A genuine, like, this is not, since I've said so many of the other fun facts, this is actually a true one.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't do the whole thing, but you have to look it up. For years is my audition song. I use the Star Trek theme because Gene Roddenberry wrote lyrics. They're actual lyrics to the Star Trek theme, and they are ridiculous. So if you're interested.
Can we hear a little?
Yes. Do we have time?
Like we're going to, if you guys stick around after the credits, we'll have a little post-credit scene with Mr.
Little tidbit.
This is how I get you guys to stay listening the whole thing.
Yeah.
There we go.
Retention time.
On these movie episodes, we always do a grading system. And I like to ask, what did you think when you originally watched it? And what did you think on your most recent rewatch? And this goes A+ to F. I don't think we'll ever hit an F if we're doing it on this show, but so let's start with Satomi. How would you grade when you first watched it versus what you think now?
Well, my dears, this one goes to 11 for me from the very first time I watched it to every time I've rewatched it since. This is an A+++++ every single time I watch it. I just think it's one of my favorite films of all time.
Very good, Miss Geeky Page.
With an A+2 because I was a huge Trek kid growing up, so this hit when I watched it like everything I loved, making fun of everything I loved, and I thought it was great. And like Satomi, every time I rewatch it, I still laugh my head off. Mm-hmm. I know what's coming, but I still laugh my head off. So A+.
Very good. Blaz?
So it wouldn't be a good movie episode unless I did this, but I was only 9 years old when I first saw it. I loved it. It was great. I was critiquing it, writing little notes in my journal about what.
Dear diary.
It was, Sigourney Weaver
is hot.
It definitely was an A when I saw it, and throughout the years, it's always been an A, but now that I know that Dub likes it so much, it's probably about a D- now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, he's trying to manufacture this rivalry thing. It's just not. Blythe,
it's a coup.
Blythe, I love you. It's not going to happen.
We will overthrow.
Such a little punk.
Sean, what do you and your beard think?
Fun fact, I've never actually seen the movie. So.
He pulled a Courtney. He pulled a Courtney.
No, I
never gonna live that down.
I would say hearts in the beginning and hearts in the end. Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Yeah. Now, first time I watched this movie, I was because of the bad advertising that they had, I was expecting a child's movie. So I was very much a little biased to it before. So when I first watched it, I will call this a New Hope. And when I watch it now, I love it. I love everything about it. So I will call it an Empire.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice.
Oh, and so very quickly, Satomi, talk about our favorite charity real quick.
BroadwayHearts.org. You can check us out at www.BroadwayHearts.org. We're Broadway performers that bring music to kids in hospitals and their families, do interactive events and sing-alongs, and we have a real good time. So check us out.
Yeah.
Sean, did you have something you wanted to push? I remember we thought last time we missed out something on you.
Sure. If you want to reach out to me on the Book of Face, I coach. I think that was what you wanted. And if you're super interested in wilderness survival, I have a website. It's ruggedindividual.ist, rugged individualist. So yeah, if you want to check out the wilderness survival stuff, I think those are the things you said. If I wanted to say,
yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Oh wow, I sound like just such a tyrant. I'll let you say this if you really ask nice.
You encourage.
That's why we're staging a coup.
It doesn't stop. So thank you everybody so much for joining us. This episode has been a blast. If you haven't watched this or haven't watched it in the last year, make a plan, watch it. And also the documentary that we reference quite a bit is called Never Surrender. It is on Amazon. If you have Amazon Prime, it is for free. Highly recommend both of them and watch them together. You know, on the same sitting, because it's just, you'll catch so much out of this.
At the same time, like two TVs simultaneously playing.
Not everybody's U-Blyze.
I think we could.
Well, we know your generation and your short attention span.
Actually, that's how Sean and his beard watched it. His beard watched one. Sean watched the other.
Mm-hmm. Sean, which one did you watch? Which one did your beard watch?
We interchange, and I can't with my beard. It's so opinionated. So
two souls, one mind.
I was like, just go in the kitchen and make some bread.
Outstanding. So thanks everybody for your listener feedback. If you want to check out some of the listener feedback, it was fantastic. Most of it's on Facebook. So if you go to our question thing, you can read. I mean, people have some really brilliant answers. So until next time, with Miss Geeky Page, Satomi Hoffman, Blythe, and Sean Annis Magical Beard, this is Dub, and keep on geeking on. Catch you next time, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Never give up, never surrender.
You have been listening to the latest episode of the iHeart Geek Show. Make sure you visit our website at www.iheartgeekshow.com. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you check us out on YouTube, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And keep on geeking on to all of you geek rock stars.